record, say something. You see how the wave is moving?
Right. Okay, so we've got a test of the Bingo Raffle Advisory Board on June 8th, 2006.
Proceed on. Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please, and we'll start the meeting. Nick, if you'd like to start for us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Got to take care of an administrative matter before we start on the rules. We have several minutes from previous meetings that we haven't approved. Shannon, if you'll enter those in the record for us, then we'll call for a vote on them.
The first one was the 2005 meeting. 11-9 of 05, 5 of 06. The 9-14 of 05 meeting did not have a quorum, so it couldn't be considered a meeting.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right. Our primary purpose here today is to go through the draft of the rules regulating bingo and raffles. And I think the easiest way to do that is take them one at a time, which you have on the board there. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What Rudy has sent out to you, you have a copy of the signed act, and in the bill itself, you have the deletions and additions from the bill. Once it goes over to legislative drafting for the new statutes, you'll see all that taken out, and it'll just show as regular text. In the rules that you have two copies. Both of them are the same. However, one of them is like the one on the screen that shows balloons out on the right-hand side that where we inserted or deleted something. And the other version is in a little bigger font, so those of us who have to wear glasses can see it.
Thank you.
Wait, one of the things that we did here was to take a look at the old rules in the yellow book and realize that they were drafted and adopted over a substantial period of time. One of the sections of our office is in the process of putting in an electronic rule filing program for agencies, so they have to submit their rules in a particular format, and they do it electronically. So since that person reports to me, she's made it quite clear that she would like us to do the same thing when we submit our rules. So in addition to reorganizing it, we've reformatted it so that it will go in electronically. We discussed last board meeting that you would like to have the rules set for a hearing probably in the 1st of August. The date for getting these proposed rules into the system for a notice of rulemaking is next Friday. I'm not sure that gives everybody a sufficient amount of time. So internally, we have discussed doing it the third Friday of July, which means that the hearing would be sometime around the first week of August. That will give us about a month and a half to go out and actually do a roadshow with organizations in other parts of the state where we get input from them. And Rudy and his staff are putting together some meetings. It would be helpful if we could get members of the board to travel with us on some of those. So, for example, when we go up north and talk to the organizations up there, Mr. Pizzuti, we'd like to see you there to explain the board's position on them. So that being said, let's kind of quickly go through it. And what I'll try and do is just make some notations on the screen here. If there are objections to anything that you see, and we'll come out with a new draft. You'll see on the screen this little thing that says XE Bingo Game C Definition. What we intend to do is have an index at the end of the rules where people can look up a word and find it by rule number as opposed to reading through it. Now, once they get posted online, people will be able to use the computer to find a particular term inside the rules. But for those people who are reading them on paper, you should be able to, like any reference book, go to an index. So that's what this does, is it creates an index at the end. We changed the definition of bingo game to include some new technology that allows for numbers to be randomly generated by a machine as opposed to calling balls that are sent up through a blower. Again, this is not a mandatory provision for bingo raffle licensees, but it allows them to use the technology if they choose to. We've defined bucket raffle. A lot of these raffles are already conducted out there. We didn't have any definition in the rules, and there's certainly no definition in the statutes. So we've now defined it because later on in the rules you'll see that we have some regulations about how these bucket raffles can be conducted. Down here under FACE, we've defined it to also include double action games. We took out the term inurement because it means, we think, about the same as remuneration, and we've defined remuneration down lower on the screen. We also define master board to cover those random number generators that may be out there. Please, if you have any questions, jump in. There were some discussions about the difference between a seal pull tab, a concealed pull tab, a bonanza game. We tried to take those suggestions and build them into the definition to make sure that we say what we want to say. For the suppliers and the manufacturers, if those definitions don't match what you think we should be saying, please let us know. We've defined stretch raffle. Again, that's one of the things that organizations have been doing out there, and we had some complaints from people and some questions from organizations. So since we are creating a rule that deals with stretch raffle, we decided to define the term. We've also defined ticket to mean something other than a printed piece of paper, so it would allow for things like a deck of card raffles or key raffles for cars. Now, in the organization, we've tried to make it easier for people to find the section that applies to them. So we've broken it down into licensees, the various kinds of licensees. A lot of the language is exactly the same as you have in existing rules. It's just been put in a different spot.
Mike, let me interrupt you.
Yes, sir.
Before you go on. I want to ask the members of the board, do you prefer to discuss each one of these rules before he goes into the next one for any changes or anything?
Yeah, I think we ought to. When would we have discussion if we don't do it that way? I think
that's the best way to do that so we don't get too far ahead of where we're at. Any comments on Rule 2, on definitions in there, or Number 2? I guess that's a rule. You have any?
No.
Okay. I think, Mike, that'll be an easier way for us to,
okay,
so we don't get too far ahead and let them discuss each one as you go.
And we'll
licenses.
Go on to the next one. Rule Number 3A is bingo raffle licensees. One of the problems that Shannon has had over the years is that when we have either a new application or a renewal application coming in, people seem to forget what's required for us to grant a license. We put it into rule. Here are some of the things that we need from you, and they don't include everything that you might be able to provide. We've made historically a big deal about a 501c organization. Well, when you look in the Constitution, you look in the statutes, the IRC section 501c3 is only mentioned in one provision, and that is for exempt organizations. There is only one exempt organization in Colorado under our definition, and that is United Way. So to the extent that you have a 501c3, it can help you, but it's not necessarily required so long as you meet all of the other requirements of the Constitution in terms of, are you a qualified organization? We talk in C here about renewal applications, so that in a case of a renewal, these are the things that we'd like to see when you submit your application to us. It will certainly help you, help us speed up the process of granting you a license. In rule number 3A2, this again is a rehash of the existing rule concerning what information you need to post. We have modified it slightly because of technology. If you have a computer and you maintain a copy of the Constitution, statutes, and rules on a computer, and you can print out a particular provision, that will suffice. You don't necessarily have to have this behind the counter, this being the yellow booklet. Any questions so far? Yes, sir.
Thank you. My feeling, and I have a hard time expressing this, I think what is in the Constitution in terms of organizations that are allowed to requirements that are not in the Constitution. A letter from the IRS saying that they are not corporation, all those things are not requirements, and they historically have not been.
Yeah, Mr. Amon, I think if you read through it, you'll see that we said these are the types of information that you could submit in your application, not necessarily exclusive of those documents that you might have to substantiate whether you've been in business for 5 years, whether you have a membership, et cetera. They're not required. Would you show me, please?
It says application. In addition to any other items required, each new application, copy of the IRS letter recognizing the organization as exempt.
No, sir. If you look at four, proof that the organization has existed for at least 5 years. Proof of existence may consist of one or more of the following. It's not a mandatory item. We had
tried. I have no objection.
That's one of the reasons why we have added these provisions to the rules, that it helps our people by giving them some guidelines. This can be submitted, and if they have this,
we had a tape recorder of this conversation.
This is being taped. And if you want a copy of the file when we're done, we'll be happy to send it to you.
No more lawyer talk.
I looked at my license and I'm just curious.
what cases is that a problem? I always tell charities that in their
yes,
organization,
yes, I know.
There's a number of charities that have nonprofit corporations, but they have a problem with the problem.
Your veterans organizations are all 501c19s.
Many times these organizations, the bingo was intended to help support financially, are loosely formed volunteer organizations. They don't got everything.
I don't see the problem here, Mike.
They rock along for 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years, and they have a lot of difficulty. But it's a requirement to be a corporation, and it's not. An unincorporated association should be. As long as it's interpreted, one of the things that might help. It's entitlement to a license, and they're not mandatory, then I have no problem. If they're not,
remember here.
As long as they're not mandatory, make it easier on valid nonprofits to be able to.
Yes.
I think that it clearly states, though, in the writing of that, that it says one or more may be submitted, right?
Is yes, ma'am.
The wording. Mm-hmm. So it clearly states, and I don't think there'll be a problem with it.
It's designed to help our people, too. And
I
would agree with Mr. Amon that in the past we may have inconsistently applied the rules.
I think this clears it up in there.
Right.
As far as that's concerned.
On two, notices and material required to be posted. Does anybody have any comments?
When you get down to section F on where you're at now, it goes from 3 to 5. Did you intentionally leave out 4?
I'm sorry, sir. Where are you? I'm looking at
notices
two.
And material required.
F.
2F.
D, E, 2, A, B, C, D, E, F.
Then under F, you've got 1, 2, 3, and then 5.
4, 5.
Back up, Mike.
Okay, got it. All right, thank you. 1, 2, 3, 4.
There's 4 there, but on the printout, this copy doesn't.
Okay, well, you can see paragraph 4 up there.
And actually, this is the draft that they have first is the one without the change notations.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the one with the change notations. I'll have to check.
No, it hasn't.
The change notations. Oh, you have the change notations.
Paragraph 4 discusses the new provision under 1086 that allows for a secondary jackpot of 10%. And then because of discussions that we had several weeks ago, we have deleted provisions talking about concealed face games.
Where yet?
The deletion under 7, 8, and 9. And 10 and 11, you can see, will be renumbered to 7 and 8. Show that. Didn't
well, they took them out in the end of anything you could leave it.
See what you did.
And because I'm looking at the same one that we printed out. Okay, we're down under paragraph 3 now, sale and use of bingo cards, packs, and sheets.
Oh,
all this should be very similar, if not identical, to the wording in the existing rules. One of the other things that I attempted to do here in redrafting these rules, we had a lot of them written in passive voice, and I've tried to change those to an active voice just from a grammatical standpoint. So if you challenge my grammar, please let me know. Senator Dan, Julie, you're grinning back there. I know you've probably seen something already. So, and because these are still a discussion draft, you will see some weird wording. For example, here under F3, we talk about old Rule 9. That was just a note to myself to try and reference what the old rule was. Yes, sir?
I'd like to go back to 3C. It says, each pack sold for use at a bingo occasion shall be collated from a series or set of consecutive number sheets. How can that be construed? Now, does that mean that you cannot use, what am I saying, partial packs when you're selling these things? As an example, when you sell packets at a bingo and people say, I want, if you'll give me a packet from the top, middle, and bottom, we no longer have it consecutively numbered. So does that put us at risk there? Or
that rule's never changed.
Hasn't it changed? It's not new? I guess I do need a definition on it then.
The answer to your question is what you said is correct. They do ask a lot of times from top, middle, bottom, and a lot of times the groups do that, but they're not supposed to.
Why?
Only because that's what the rule says. So I agree with you. Why is a good question, but that's
because the rule says.
Well, it needs to be changed.
At one time, wasn't it an easier way for you to keep track or for you as a group to count how many you've sold at a quick glance? You know, right. You're going to start with one and you're going to finish. Right. So if you're missing some in the middle, you don't know how many you should have sold for that amount of money. That makes sense.
Used to be, or it still is, on the Alley 34, you have to say how many packs you started with, how many packs you sold. And so it was easy, if you were going to do it consecutively, to know how many you sold just by looking at the serial number from where you started to where you ended to say how many you had left. But if you're doing the top, middle, and bottom, then they're not in order, and so you don't know how many packs you have without counting them. That was why. Maybe that's why the investigators thought it was a problem in the past. I don't know.
I just...
That's just okay. What the
I guess I hadn't seen it before. Yeah, just me.
My understanding of that rule was just that if you sell a pack that has blue, yellow, and green, you have to be consecutively numbered sheets. Yellow, they come from a series of consecutively numbered, like a previous number. Not that the packs you give the player have to be handed out in.
So,
but in order to record a full series, you have to be consecutively numbered. It's a set. You get a serial number and you get 1,500 of them in a set. That serial number, whether it's consecutively numbered or not, you're going to have 1,500.
That's kind of, it's a limbo land. You get a set of Of cards, and you're 1,500 in there. So you pull pack one, two. You take your first pack as an example. There's 100 in there, and you divide it up. So it did originally come from a consecutive serial number.
Well,
I think that's the theory I'll work on.
We always apply the consecutive modifier rather than to the order.
Rudy, have we had any problems with that, something like that?
I've never written anybody up for it.
Well, I think I'll let it lie.
But I think at one time it was designed for us to go in and check invoices against
Oh, packs. Okay.
Right. But we don't know you do it or anything.
pounds.
You're going to let it go?
Yeah, we'll let it go.
Okay. Moving right along.
Leave my note in there that if anybody has suggested language that they'd like to change it to, you know, send it to us. Okay?
Okay.
I'm not sure that we necessarily have any heartburn over changing it.
No. I think this provision might go solely to how packs are constructed, not how they're handed out and sold.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we made some changes down here under I concerning progressive jackpot cards and sheets. And Mr. Amon, I believe that was your suggestion to strike the language here. Was there any particular reason that we did that?
The comment was that it was somewhat self-enforcing that groups were going to have a natural impressives are separate and distinct. They're sold at a much lower price.
Question. I show inserts in here that don't show up on the screen.
Exactly. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, we inserted some language to take care of double action, progressive cards, and I'll have to find out why it's not showing up there.
It's on our copies that we're reading, but not there.
It's on the copy?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that I'm reading here that aren't on your...
Yes,
screen. No, but even though they're on the side, I'm still looking at, like, I-1 reads completely different than what we're looking at. You guys don't have what we've got, obviously.
Our copies have all the deletions. It's got all the
instructions. I don't know what's going on here. Well, I'm just wondering, we wouldn't have, I think we've got a mechanical problem here because we wouldn't have taken out. I mean, it shows that it's been inserted,
yeah.
And it's not there. So we have added, yes, ma'am.
Sorry, just a quick question. The word design, that still has to, the bicolor and design, the design still has to fall under the definition of what a bingo card is, though, right?
Yes, ma'am. B-I-N-G-O, 5x5.
Thank you.
Okay. In any event, these insertions over here will be in the draft rules, and it'll cover electronic equipment, and it will cover double action cards.
They combined one and two, what they did on our
guy. I mean,
I figured out what it did.
Let me try. Bear with me here. Give me a second. I'm going to take a look at a different draft.
Back to H.
Where?
Back to H.
Yeah, right here.
$3. That's a low.
Yeah. It's got a different copy up there that we're looking at.
Where's the discussion draft with change tracking?
It's my working draft.
That's what I had up there.
I don't think it should be 50 or 100. Nowadays, I think it's 30.
That's the one. That's the one we're looking at now.
Okay.
See, it's completely different what you guys looked at before. Look at number one. Oh, no, that's still the...
Yes, ma'am.
The copy that Rudy sent out to us in the margin has all the deletions. surgeons are just incorporated in the text. And it looks like you
had... Okay. I apologize. This is one of the problems when you're working with multiple drafts and multiple people working on it. So where are we now? Okay. So HI1. Okay, so this has the insertions. Okay.
Except it doesn't, the one we're still looking at talks about double action here.
Look under number 2 or 48 preprinted numbers in the case of double action games.
Okay, I see. It's blended in number 1 in the draft we're looking at. You've got it numbered as 1 and 2.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah.
Hooked together here somehow.
Okay. Again, sorry for the confusion. Sale of pull tabs, I think, is the existing language. I deleted one letter there that was incorrectly. And okay, method of payment by the player, no credit. However, we've made a provision in here, and this could be controversial, where a licensee can accept a debit card, but the risk is on you that you have to make sure that it really is a debit card. So if you're using... We now understand that there are machines out there that will only accept debit cards. There are other machines that you can accept credit or debit. If you choose to use those kind of machines, then the risk is on you to make sure that your people taking money are watching the person push debit and not credit. Kind of like you do there at Home Depot. And again, it's a controversial issue, and depending on what the licensees want to do, it's either take that provision out, leave it in, and give the choice to the licensee. So it's an either-or situation. Yes, ma'am.
Deposit of the money into the licensee's account instantaneous,
yes.
Or is there a delay?
No.
Instantaneous. It should a debit card should be instantaneous.
Yes.
It withdraws.
Right.
So then you have, don't you have a
24-hour delay? Okay.
No different than the use of a credit card?
It's really no different than the use of a check.
No, if you're waiting on a company to deposit it into your account,
they've already
like a credit card is also. That money is, credit is extended between the credit card company and the customer, not the nonprofit licensee and the customer.
Well, the reason for not allowing credit is because that's in the statute. We didn't change that provision in the statute.
When a credit card is used, the licensee is the extending credit. A credit card company is extending
credit. But it's taken out of the cash and you just pulled $20. Now added to some liability that they have the option.
No, you're talking about debit, he's talking about credit.
A debit card works, the money is taken from the customer and deposited into the account of the nonprofit. The way a credit card works, the credit is extended from the bank. Later deposit the same way from that bank into the account of the licensee. There's no
except in the debit card transaction, has already not in their possession anymore.
Right.
Been paid.
But
the credit situation, they have.
But by the same token,
cancel a credit transaction too.
I have a problem with that with the credit card, because when I use a credit card, I instantly obligate myself to the company, to that credit card company. So I don't understand why. So when you go to get a meal somewhere and you use your credit card, you're not actually getting credit, your food on credit. You're getting your food because you've obligated yourself to the company, and you're going to have to pay the company. So, and they're going to pay me rather than the $30 for the meal rather than anything. That's why I have a problem with it. I'm on your side with the credit card.
Nick, with the credit card, though, you can cancel or protest the credit transaction. With a debit card, you can't. The money's gone.
Yeah. Ah, and they can also stop payment on a check. Mm-hmm. Six of one, half a dozen.
But you can't stop payment on a debit
card. It costs the group money for a credit card, a certain percentage, 3%, 5%, 7%. Debit card doesn't have that same kind of percentage there.
Well, that's an option I believe we should have, whether I want to incur that 3%.
With a debit card, as long as you enter that PIN number, and I think that should be looked into at some point. Otherwise, it will be processed as a credit transaction.
But the state's going to have to define for us, because of the statute, whether a credit card is credit or not.
Credit card is no different. You have an obligation created from the bank. Credit card, you have that obligation. Prohibition in the statute was to prevent nonprofit groups from saying to players, yeah, here's your tax. That's the extension of credit by the group, not the customer pays for its obligation to the credit card. It's not a big deal either.
No. Put an ATM in like Westminster did.
There you go.
Those, some parts.
I don't think this needs to be tweaked any. I think we should leave it the way it is.
Okay, under conduct of bingo games, we've added a provision in C for random number generators. And we're still, honestly, a little bit uncomfortable with the concept, but we know that they're out there.
Are they, when we talked about generators, I know I should have discussed it earlier. Why do we want to go to the generator and get away from the old method of conducting bingo?
Or not. It's either or.
Why do we want to have the availability? Go ahead.
For the same reason we don't use a thing to turn a handle and let balls and then reach in and grab balls.
That's right.
Technology gives you the capability of doing things in a more efficient and proper way. And so... I'm checking on what a random number generator costs. They do it in England and other places. They're doing bingo, and we're trying to find out how much they are. You still have to have a caller. You still have to, button or whatever it is. You still have to do that, but it could be significantly less money than a big board that a supplier is going to give you, like a power play board or anything else. And it doesn't do anything different except. It lights up what's coming on the screen. It lights up on the camera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just a higher technology, just like it's been from when we're going from this type of calling balls to the next board, to the next board, to the next board. It's just a new level of being able to do bingo in a more efficient way.
However, when you talk about your hand cranks, you still are using bingo balls. They come out of the cage automatically when you turn it in the proper direction. They'll come out. We're still using balls, so to speak. Now we're going to electronics. And I've seen so much of this throughout this state that they want to just switch bingo over electronics. That's all. They want these TEDs. You know, they've got the TEDs. Now you want to go to these massive generators. The generators is going to generate the number. What's happening?
Well, the charities are getting much more choice than they've had before.
Are the charities? really getting them that much choice, or is it the bingo hall owners are getting the choice? The bingo hall owners, you're not telling the charities, if a charity comes to a bingo hall, he has no choice to whether he wants a generator or if he wants bingo balls. He has no choice.
That's not true.
And whatever, so you guys got there.
He has
there.
The choice of going to a bingo hall that has a calling machine with balls or not. I mean,
sure, we all have choices of whether we want to go or not want to go. Go ahead.
Plus, the origin of a lot of this is bingo blowers that will automatically announce the number. They can automatic mode to manual mode. Nonprofit, one of the big holdbacks of getting volunteers, somebody to get up in front of the crowd and call the number. So a lot of times groups quit bingo because they don't have anybody that wants to get up there and take the slings of arrows from the customers. Equipment, you can set it on automatic and you can turn caller into an operator type person who watches and makes sure everything is automatically announces the balls to the players. That kind of available to the group.
Like, it should also be noted too that a random number generation is not necessarily a separate machine. The machines that exist out there today would just be software upgradable to incorporate random number generation. So it's not like we're going to have to go out and, you know, if a group chooses to use random number generation, in most of the machines out there today, this could be incorporated. Just so that's implied. I don't know if that's implied by your rule or not, but
I might have to tweak that.
Right.
Okay.
Is there a reason that it's actually going into the rules? I mean, have you actually looked at these machines? Is it so we're kind of doing, you're doing the rule before any of that comes, or is that what's happening?
We're doing the rules, and I think later on where we talk about manufacturers, we discuss, similar to the electronic aids, what they have to do in order to demonstrate to us and get approval that this random number generator really does work.
There'll be a submission.
Because the rules right now don't allow for it.
Right, it seems like it's opposite.
But
man,
well,
I would think you do.
If you don't put it in
the rule, then you don't have it, and you can't do it.
Well, you'd have to apply for it and then do the rule.
Well, then we'd have to wait another 2 years.
That'd be my point.
We're trying to keep up with technology a little bit if we can.
I guess my big a question I have, has the SOS looked at this machine, or are we taking the word of other people?
We are putting these proposed rules in there based on information that's been provided. We have not seen the machine. And the machine is, even under these rules, is not going to appear out in the halls without a process. And that's what the rulemaking does, is it provides a process where a manufacturer could come in and say, here's our new electronic aid, or here's our new random number generator, or here's our new board, and it's different than what you have out there now.
And that is explained farther on.
In L5, we changed the word called. L1, we changed the word called, and then in L5, we changed the word indicates to signaled. In other words, you don't have to do it orally. You can jump up and down and wave your arms if you're the floor worker. And we took out a lot of discussion on concealed face cards. Okay, now we get down into M. This is more controversial.
I would still make a comment. Primary responsibility of the player to get someone's attention. is missing.
In L1?
L1.
Okay.
It must be stopped after bingo has been signaled by.
Okay.
I think there should be an additional player's responsibility.
Because there's all kinds of signals going out there. You don't, once you hold your hand up, who knows? Does the caller know what's going on?
I've seen many instances where the player said bingo, not enough for three or four people around them to hear it, and no one else in the hall, and then split where somebody else, another ball is called, and then all those players, that group stands up, oh, yeah, they called bingo, and you got five or six people all willing to swear on a stack of Bibles that bingo was called,
yep.
But not loud enough for anybody to reason.
Okay.
And Rudy.
That's a good suggestion. We'll get that in there. Okay, M1. Now we're into the number of progressive jackpot games that you can run. And again, we have some concern about this, more from the standpoint of paternalism, because we're not absolutely certain that the organization has the ability to adequately account for three progressive bingo games running on the same night. So that's what's out there. No, I'm just stating that we have some concern. So absent other concern from the board, that will stay in there. Right.
And they have to have their money available.
Proof this very well.
What's the advantage of the three progressive games? Three progressive jackpot games. What's the advantage?
What's the advantage? I'll make a suggestion of how you could do that.
I want to know, what is the advantage of having three progressive games
going at one time?
In one session.
It would give players the capability of more choice of different ways they could do things. For example, your normal progressive that you have now, another type of progressive that they do in places is they have a thing they call Powerball or a bonus ball, which is basically when they buy packs, they can say they want to buy the chances at the bonus ball or not. And what the bonus ball is, a ball is pulled out before the game begins, let's say, pulled out, and the number's written on the board. Then if anybody bingos on that, they win that jackpot.
Yeah, but you have to pay extra for those different games.
Yes, you have to pay extra for those.
When do you pay for those games?
At the door when you're buying the packs. Not on the bonus bingos. It would be one way. And then another third one is you could give your progressive away at every session.
Yeah, but then it says here the public must not have access to the premises where bingo is being conducted.
This rule is set up.
Say that again?
It says here at the bottom of M1, the public must not have access to the premises where bingo is being conducted because it's for members only. In other words, you're discriminating.
I don't know.
Sorry, the public can't play here. Only members can play.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, members only is that's a definer. It says in a members only occasion. Yeah. You could have multiple progressives in a members only occasion. So,
for example, let's just say you wanted to run, 4 hours of bingo game after bingo game, and each bingo game would add to the progressive, but by the end of the evening, it goes. We've defined that as being a members-only occasion, like for the Elks, where they run their own games. And
have their own thing.
Right, but they don't open it that particular game to the public.
Yeah, it can be confusing if not.
Yeah. 1A or something. Make it
1A. There will be a lot of renumbering here.
Start way up by notwithstanding.
Okay.
Members-only games, maybe I'm not familiar with it, still count towards your amount of games you can have per year?
Yes. For example, right here under 7, the suggestion is to increase your total occasion limit from $1,500 to $2,500. So even if you're running a members-only occasion, you could only give out $2,500. Now, that's exclusive of progressive.
Combined 705.
I was actually asking the amount of sessions. Is it
158?
Yes. 156. Well, that's the number of occasions you can run a year, per year, not the number of games you can run within a single occasion.
Right.
But it would count as an occasion.
So, again, the next potentially controversial area would be in paragraph 7 that increases your occasion limit.
Five in ours.
What's the purpose of increasing it to 2,500?
As we know, where bingo is today is it's gone down in regards to revenue and the number of people that come to bingo. Colorado. And so the purpose of all of these rule changes are to try and increase how many people and how many new people we can get to come to bingo occasions. It's not like we want to keep the same amount of people and do things in the same old way. We want to build bingo up to be something that can be fun and exciting and have more people in the seats than we have in the seats at this point in time. And one of the ways that we can do that is by one of the ways that we can do that is by increasing the amount of money that potentially you can give away. It's not like you must give it away or you have to give it away or how you give it away. It's that you are able to then maybe increase the desire for other people who don't come to come to bingo.
And you know, that's one reason of making sure you kill the bingo game here by raising it to $2,500. Because you've got a lot of players out there. You would have to raise your door prices for your packs in order to pay out $2,500. When you raise those prices, you are throwing 80% of the players outside your hall, and you won't be seeing bingo by them anymore.
I understand that. So I have some paperwork I want to hand out to you that maybe would explain how you can sell packs and give this money away that doesn't affect...
Does this... You may have that, but this makes it an unlevel playing field for bingo. It's because you need a hall. You need large quantities of people, quote, to come in or to get out to make enough money to sell these $2,500. The thing is, you, a small organization, cannot conduct bingo in its own home or facility that has a maximum space for 150, can really make this money, and enough money and a profit in order to give away $2,500. Unless you raise the bingo prices, the bingo packet prices, things like that, what it does, it gives us an unlevel playing field. It allows you, as a hall owner, to have more people come to your hall at a reduced rate, because we can't charge, let's say, $10 a pack. If we charged everybody that came into, a, quote, an Elks Lodge or any of these other smaller organizations $10 a pack for the number of packs that they play and can afford, and the prize is going to be, we'll never be able to make any profit up to the $2,500. So we can't compete, or these people can't compete with a hall that can get 200 or 300 people in there and seat them.
How is that not already?
Because we're all on a level playing field of $1,500.
Well, we don't have to pay.
No, a lot of them that don't have
to pay. A lot of them don't pay. The smaller organizations in the outlying communities, where there's no competition with a bingo hall. Well, right now we're competing with bingo halls.
Okay, so I just want to hand these out to you, okay? And maybe just explain a little bit, and this may help. Have one. If I have 10. One of the things that we talked about in the past, oops, this fell off of yours, that we talked about in the past is, you don't have these.
We can share one.
For example, and I'm showing you this because this is one of the ways that they do bingo in Las Vegas. Is they sell multiple level packs. In other words, here's a typical, just a format sheet with typical payouts if you're going to pay out $1,500 and if you're going to pay out $2,500. Are you with me on that, okay? And then if you turn the page, what you see is, here we have 80 players. This is a typical door sheet from one of the bingo halls, the bingo company actually in Arvada. This is the 80 players. And I took that door sheet. And all I did on this particular sheet was divide it in half. So half the people bought blue packs and half the people bought red packs. Are you with me?
No.
Okay. So you have two different color sets of packs. One is all blue bordered. And it says sheet 1, sheet 2, sheet 3, sheet 4, sheet 5, sheet 6. Then you have another set of packs which are red bordered packs, and it says sheet 1, sheet 2, sheet 3, sheet 4, sheet 5, sheet 6. So you pay a particular price for the blue packs, which pay out that amount that I showed you on the first page.
Okay. In other words, the more you pay for your pack, the more you can win.
Right.
This gives your players a better chance to, or more options for what they want to do.
Correct. So they can buy at the level they're buying now, they can buy more, they can do all of those flexibilities. What you see then is you see, and just assuming because it was 50-50, they bought 40 people bought blue packs and 40 people bought red packs. I'm just using a number. Whether I do it 2/3, 1/3, whatever the percentage is, it basically comes out the same as far as pro rata share that's paid out. But let's say 50% bought that, 50% bought the other, and let's say then the payouts or the bingos that were won were 50-50. So the blue packs paid out 50%, the red packs paid out 50%. So the total payout is $2,000. Are you with me? But the total income is $2,665. Okay, so there's a gross profit of $665. Am I going too fast? Does that make sense?
What's your admission charge?
This is the pack prices are right there. It says pack prices. One pack, two pack, three packs, extra packs, specials, all of that.
And you're over here on the side where it says quantity. You're assuming these people are going to buy that number of packs?
This is an actual door sheet. This is an actual door sheet from one of the games that was run at the bingo company on a particular night for 80 players.
And the quantity is a quantity of...
All I did was take what number each of them bought, and I divided it in half. So I just assumed half would buy red, half would buy blue. I'm just doing an example. Okay? So half of them are paying the price there, and half are paying the higher price on the right-hand side. So they end up with $665 to go against their rent and their supplies and all of that stuff. Okay, on the second page of that, the next page, all I did was put in actual numbers from the 80 players for that night, only $1,500, so that you can see what was made was the income was $2,210, the payout was $1,500, which is a difference of about $700, okay? So on one hand, the other page was 665, on this page it's 700. So it's so very close, it doesn't matter. The point is, it's the same amount of people. It's not increasing the amount of people, but that's the whole point of raising the potential for how much payout. You'll increase the people by 5 or 10 or 20. Whatever the increase is becomes profit to the charity when you have more people coming, whether you're in your own hall, all by, you know, just the Elks doing it or just the American Legion doing it or whoever's doing it. We're trying to become more competitive and more exciting and more fun than just sitting there calling numbers, B1, did you win? You know, we're trying to be something that can have lots of flexibility and lots of potential. For example, Mike talked about earlier, somebody in their own hall doing bingo for 4 or 5 hours, they could run a ton of games during that 4 or 5 hours, you know, and to give away up to $2,500, not having to do it this way, but they could do some special $25 games or $50 games or $10 games or whatever it is to give them the full flexibility that they wanted. If it was a hall like David's or 56th at Sheridan or whatever that is, Mike Hill's hall, where they have an entrance price and then 25 cents a pack or 50 cents a pack, for $1,500, they have that same one they have now, and for the other, it's maybe they raise the overall entrance price to $12, and then it's 50 cents a pack or $1 a pack. You know, there's ways for each of them to be able to do that because we have the flexibility of doing it, and the whole reason for it is to stop the bingo company going, the bingo business going in the negative and going in the positive. This is what they've done in Oregon. This is what they've done in Texas. This is what they've done in Washington and Alabama and Mississippi, where they've increased bingo from where it was to make it really viable again for the charities.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure, sir.
Isn't it under income?
Yeah.
On the first one, you have the example of the real sheet.
Yeah.
The income is $1,125.
Yeah.
Then over on the other one where the $2,500 is given away, total income is $1,540.
So those two are added together.
But in a way, the whole idea of bingo is to get them to collect at the door what you're supposed to give away. I know that doesn't happen, but
yeah, that's what
isn't $1,125 closer to $1,500 than $1,540 is closer to $2,500?
No, but you add these two together. Payouts are at the bottom, you see? Payouts, because half the people won on this one and half the people won on the other one.
So okay.
You see what I'm saying?
So you say you're only going to give out a percentage based on what your sales are.
You're only going to give out a percentage based on who wins, what they bought and what they win. Right? So the odds of you giving out $2,500 when you go this direction are very low. For example, in this case, let's say you're saying you had $2,500 and $1,500. If two people won on blue packs and two people won on red packs, for example, okay, and let's say on the blue pack the payout, whatever it was, $100, and on the red pack, $300. You divide the $100 by four, because there's four winners, and that's $25, and you divide the $300 by four, because there's four winners, and so, or two winners, whatever my numbers are. And so therefore, the odds of you ever paying out the $2,500, if you're using multiple level packs, is very low. Although they can do it.
Well, let me ask you a question.
It is possible.
let me ask you a question. Since we're talking about that, if we have the players come in the door, everybody, we have 100 players, 99 of them buy the $7 pack.
Yeah.
And one player buys the $10 pack.
Yeah.
Now, and let's say, since we're all talking relatively here, what happened if that $10 pack does the winning?
They won all 12 games?
Yeah. Does he get $2,500?
Yeah, if he won every game, he'd win $2,500.
I'm just saying theoretically.
So he has the chance of winning.
He has a chance of winning. Yeah, we never brought it when that. We didn't bring in that much money, of course, did we?
No. But that happens to you a lot of times.
Well, not in my outfit, but okay.
Well, if it doesn't happen to your outfit, I don't know what you're
looking for. But I'll tell you what.
Okay, that's.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
You can have your $2,500 game. I'll stick to my $1,500 game. Regular games, we get 126, 128 players without progressive jackpot. In the halls, they get 80 players. When they get a progressive, they get maybe 200 players. Then they don't see them again. So I don't see how the $2,500 is going to help you in any way whatsoever. I can draw more people at my game because we run a simple, simple bingo game that people like to play. They come in, they want to know, do you play this? Do you play that? Do you play all this garbage that you have on here? We say, no. They say, fine, we will play here. They say, do you play Ted's? I says, no, we don't. Fine, we will play here. You know, when Ted's first came in, Ted was the solution to the bingo problem. That's salvation. What happened? Nothing. It didn't solve the problem. $2,500 is not going to solve the problem either.
Well, Austin, you do what you have to do, whatever you feel good
about. That's right,
about.
And I will.
No.
All right, and I think you should.
But I think the $2,500 is going to kill your game.
Leave an option available, guys. I think we need to leave it in there until we get through the public hearings on this. And if people are against it, fine. But it does give more options to those that want to use it.
It certainly does. Progressive, Ted's was supposed to be the panacea that took care of everything. Here came Progressive, supposed to take care of everything. Now we're going to try this, it's supposed to take care of everything. And all that's happening is our players are going down. We are closing halls and all kinds of other stuff. But that's... people want to play regular bingo, I think.
I would think we'd also be worried about the amount of organizations. I think our key isn't, along with getting more players, is we can't afford in the market to lose any more organizations that can't compete. I mean, none of us will be in business if we get down to 400 licensees that are able to run bingo. So it's not just... you do what you do. It's an idea, I think, that it does need public address, because if we lose organizations, we're all out the door.
If organizations can't make money, there's no point.
If they can't compete against, there's still small games and big games.
Right, one of the games that makes the most amount of money for a particular hall is one that's giving away $850 and not $1,500. Have the flexibility of being able to do that in a big hall or a crowded hall, all of that stuff. They've been doing that for years, and it's an Elks organization, and that's all they give away. They give away $150, they play a fast game, everybody's happy, and they make money. So the point is, you're able to make money however you decide you want to run their game. If you run a good game, like Austin is saying, and you run games that people want to do, all of those things are part of what the bingo business is about. If you don't service the customer and take care of the customer and give the customer what he wants, then you're not going to make money.
You give $1,500 away, Austin?
Every Saturday night. And today, for 27 years, I've been running bingo at St. Louis, and we haven't lost a dime. 27 years. How many other licensees can say that?
Well, I think... quite a few.
Little guys.
A lot of them are going out of business, too, because they're not making money. And this is going to chase a lot more out of business, but that's fine.
Well, but I think that this is a proposed number. It's going to be up to the rulemaker to decide what's actually going to be in that slot. So I guess as we go around the state and talk to organizations, we're going to need to get their input. If you have positive or negative comments about 1,500, 2,000, 2,500, whatever it is, you need to get that into the rulemaking hearing. You send it to me. And all that stuff will be official documentation once the notice of rulemaking goes out, and it'll go into a folder. It's available to the public, and the rulemaker will make his or her decision, and it's not me, based on the input from the public.
Okay, let's move on to some of the other sections here so we can get this done sometime today.
We have an entirely new section here that we hope will help. It's under O, called Disputed Games. Rudy can regale you at length about the number of calls that we get from organizations that have a disputed game and what should they do about it. So we have gone out, I think this is language from Wisconsin or in their statute and rules about how they deal with disputed games, and we thought it was pretty good language. So read through that, and if you see anything that raises a red flag for you, let me know. We would point out that there are some provisions in here that could have a financial cost to the organization, that if you have a game that's in dispute, you may have to provide additional sheets to the players in order to run the next game. John?
Mike, I'd like to make a generalized comment. As long as we have volunteers, we're going to mistakes maybe too. Not all these specific situations that are not on the table. Have some kind of a rule that says the game manager has discretion to resolve a problem, and that decision that means a little extra money to solve the problem, then that should stand unless it's deemed excessive. If he's doing it every game, that he's overpaying. But calls are called that are really in all the cards and start over again. Is advised by a player that a winner does not. I know players that will object to every single bingo game that the player's not entitled to win. Mm-hmm. Put that power in the player to hold up the whole process. At a minimum, there should be verification that supported by the complaint of the player or something.
I think the game manager has to have a little bit more.
We've got to support the nonprofits at some point in here to the most often mistake blowers are set up. There's a two-step process. Balls are dropped onto a shelf and then they're dropped. Often mistake is that the balls are lowered to the shelf and they remain there, and they're at the second started with fewer than all the balls in play, and then it's just Well, maybe he could make his equipment such that it could detect when another game has started and you still got 20 or 30 balls laying there on that shelf and a big light lights up or something. That's the most frequent problem. That and the caller not hearing a yell thing.
The artificial voice to say drop the balls.
I had a
big red light that starts blinking.
I had a problem with this section. I think the games manager should be given a little more authority on disputed games. Yes. We're holding him responsible for the games.
Yes.
Then let's let him be the ruling authority on some of these things.
As a games manager, boy, it'd be great to have had something we could refer to. I've been expecting your games managers to make that on how you got people yelling, hours over the counter. That public welfare thing would really good. It would be good to have some guidelines that something to hang on to, because otherwise some games managers are very, very good with the crowd. They don't get rattled. They come up with things like, you know what, you're right, we probably should have heard you, we did whatever, and they go ahead and split it, and they write a note on the paperwork that says we paid half a game extra because we had to. Others just are like deer in the headlights. They have no idea what to do, and everything's...
I think we need some guidance here. We need, for one thing, we've got to help our inspectors out. These poor guys, they get all these doggone complaints in here, and there's no guidance for them to follow to find out what's supposed to be done and what's not supposed to be done, how to do this and how to do that. And if we don't have some guidance here for them to go out there and decide that the games manager should pay off this person or that person, we're barking up a tree. We need to give. We've asked them to be our policemen. Now let's give them something that they're really acting on. Say, look, it says right here you can't do it that way. Instead of Inspector A saying, well, I think we can get away with it. You should have done it. They're all working subjectively here, so to speak. We're going to give them something that they can work with. That's point one. Point two, when we have games managers, and I have to disagree with John there. And we have our volunteers out there. It's just because the state of Colorado has authorized us to play bingo doesn't mean that we must provide them with a business or with a possibility to make bingo, make money, and make it as simple as possible for them to do so. If you can't get a games manager or a group of volunteers together to do what is required to sell enough packets or to run the game, by golly, get out of the business. We're not here to make it as easy as possible. I don't believe the state said, here's a chance for you to make money, go out there, and we're going to let you just make all you want, and if you make mistakes, so be it. And that's what's happened a lot of times. You got a dealership, you sell automobiles. If you're not successful in selling your automobiles, you're out of business. We got an opportunity here, and we need good games managers. Good volunteers. We can't always find them.
Maybe that
organization shouldn't be conducting bingo. That's the only thing I can say.
And I think
are you saying a games manager that is going to be a little by players?
I don't know. I'm a games manager myself. I don't get intimidated. I grab the book. I said, give me a moment. Let's see what we've got here. I grab the book and I say, okay, it says so right here. I can see right here that, we didn't drop all the balls. Well, let me show you. It says right here, this is what we got to do. That's great.
That's what we don't have right
That's
now.
What we don't have. Now, we've had to make a decision.
But you write a volume on disputed games. I mean, you could write a book that thick, and you still wouldn't come up with every situation that could possibly
no,
happen.
No, and that's the same way with police laws out there.
That's why you need to give the games manager a little more discretion.
I do have one suggestion. Errors that happen during
And you know, that number three on there, I think you need to take that, either reword or take that out of there, given that player, so nobody can, they're not eligible to win. He's right back there. Every player can jump up, everyone in the world will jump, but he's not eligible.
Yeah.
Okay. Noted.
I think one and two, which the remedy is replaying the game, that shouldn't be mandatory. I think those should be, in those events,
We'll make a note of that, and we'll try and provide more authority to the games manager. And it might also be helpful that if, as part of your posted occasion rules, you say that in the event of a dispute, the games manager has the final authority, leaving the games manager some guidance within the rules to determine how he is going to exercise that authority.
I think that would take some of the pressure off the calls you get here all the time, too. I didn't get my $50.
Okay. I had an account the other day that had a problem with using a Little Champs machine, Little Champ. So she wanted to start the game over because her packet that. So did I miss it that the provisions are in there for a problem that happens during if something, right, that something is wrong with the
mechanical error?
Yeah, because okay. She insisted that the new rules were already in place and that it had to be started over.
No. That's where it should be. It should be optional.
Right.
You don't have to worry about things. You don't have to worry about
start the game over, you get your money back.
It'll be the same if somebody spilled a Coke on all your packets.
I think. Yeah, I'm trying to.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Okay, if we can move on, we... Julie, I'm sorry, you've had your allotted number of comments.
Folks.
What'd you have?
Just that if it doesn't have to specify in there that new cards... ...had that situation, we just had players switched offers for a game, and they were all fine with that.
Other suggestions be appreciated, so send them in by email. Yeah. This is one that, you know, we've had so many complaints, and Chuck went out and did some research on what other states are doing, and like I say, this is what Wisconsin does. But nothing here is set in nothing's here set in stone.
Big Michigan, actually.
One of the things that we changed in number 7 was this concept of back-to-back occasions. And we just say now, you can have multiple occasions. So if, for example, you want to run 5 occasions back-to-back, and you've got the volunteers to do it, you know, go for it. Okay? All we want you to do is, if you're going to have separate occasions, make sure that you close each one out before you start the next one. Another complaint that we've had has to do with last sale deals, that licensees haven't put all of the pull tabs into the bucket, and the information is given out that, oh yeah, that's the end of it, and all of a sudden the person thinks that they bought the last pull tab, and the individual running the game goes into the back room and pulls out the rest of the box. Well, you can't do that. So,
I think a better solution to that rather than a bigger count. Public should be notified of that. When very popular in the city, our 16,000-17,000 counts, and all the tickets are out, but a 16,000 count game would have to be in 2 buckets. When all the tickets are out, the notification could be removed.
Got it. Any other comments?
I'd agree with that one, Mike. That's an important one, I think.
Okay.
Because, I mean, because there's just, it's not conceivable.
Wouldn't it be easier for us just to say no 16,000 ticket deals?
The last sale market that John's referring to is, unfortunately or unfortunately, is mostly in Colorado Springs, and that's all they use. It's the lion's share of the market.
And it's an important aspect of the game.
That was a facetious comment on my part.
We do that.
Got to make it for the record, though. Okay, we changed 4 to 6 months, and I think this was at the request of the investigators to make it consistent throughout the rules as to how long you have to keep this documentation. So right now, I think you have to keep everything for 6 months, except your records themselves, and you have to keep those for three years. And I think we changed that, too. That's further down here in record keeping.
Where are we at?
That starts at the end of the quarter. So
what number was that? Could be. If you have problems with that, let me know. We want to be consistent throughout.
6 months. Page 16.
Here's the other thing that we changed, and you can have multiple locations, but we took out serial number on the pull tab, so you just have to have a different name and a form number. Chuck had made the comment that a lot of these things didn't have serial numbers. They just had a form number on them. I'll accept language that handles that issue.
I think what he was talking about was if you were at two locations and then all of a sudden you weren't anymore, back to the one location, you have two of the same games with the same form number played on the pickle bar.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. And that,
okay.
I think that was the issue, rather than different calls.
Give me some language to insert in there. No, over. You send me an email or send a letter. I don't think we made any big changes in seal pull tabs.
Not that I can see.
Anybody seen any anything yet? Okay, here we've changed. These are for people using electronic bingo aids. We changed it from 36 to 54 faces. That could be a controversial issue. Oh, any comments?
I have a problem with that internally. Why do we want to change it to 56?
or 54 or whatever it is. Can you play 54 cards? No. So I just don't understand why we do that. I don't.
Ryan.
I'm going to answer that if I can. One of the things that happens with the groups that are using machines, that they pay a rental fee for those machines, whether there's 24 faces or 36 faces or 54 faces or 72 faces or whatever the number is, they have to pay the same rental fee. It doesn't go up or it doesn't go down, the rental fee. So it's much more efficient for the groups to be able to sell more in the machine because they're paying that fee for the rental of that equipment, number one. Number two is just, so it makes the value of the aid more efficient and better for the player and for the charity.
But originally, when we started this thing with the TEDs, and we had a controversy here just a couple of years ago about 36 faces, how you can't play 36, most people cannot play 36 faces. And they tried to prove it at one of these bingo halls that you could play 36 double action cards. Well, it can't be done unless you take an astronomical amount of time to call in between numbers and you stand up to play your cards and stuff. So what I'm saying is, are we really taking bingo from where it was originally set up for us, is to use Dauber's coins, slides, whatever it may be, now and to use an electronic, go to an electronic device to play all of these cards. And it's strictly an unfair advantage because I'm sure you can ask your inspectors, you go to a bingo hall and you find people that they're using electronics versus those who don't use the electronics, more wins are coming, of course, on the electronics. This is my perception, of course. Well, let's put it that way, my perception. I don't think we should increase the faces. I think we should leave it at 36, because I even think that, personally, is an excessive amount, but I'm willing to leave it there because that's what we've had for the last years.
One of the big arguments we had a couple of years ago was that people that don't use the electronic aid saw that it wasn't fair for them, and we had the public hearings before. They wanted less places on electronic games. I don't think we should increase it either.
Well, you know,
I'll get you in a minute, Julius. Go ahead.
The point of what we're trying to do with the bingo business in Colorado is to increase the amount of money charities can make, to increase the amount of people that want to come to bingo. It's not that we want to have the same people coming to bingo who has always come to bingo. We want them, but we want new people to come. We want younger people to come. We want people who are involved with electronics to come, which are the younger people. We want to make it so that we expand the marketplace to be able to increase the number of people in the seats so that the charities can make more money. I don't think saying we have to do everything we've always done in the past the same way is increasing the bingo business for the charities. I think saying, why don't we try everything we possibly can to increase bingo, and it is not true that more people win on machines than win on paper. I can give you the statistics from two or three different halls that show that there's as many people winning on paper as there are winning on machines. If we have 100 people in the hall, one of our halls, we have 30 to 35 machines being sold and 65 to 75 packs being sold. Then there's just as many people winning on the packs or more than there are winning on machines. So when you increase how many people come to bingo is what we're after with these rules. Otherwise, why don't we just say, well, this is all we want. We don't need progressives. We don't need machines. Let's just use slide cards, or why don't we use tiddlywinks to mark the spots? Why don't we want to increase what's happening in the world of bingo all around the country?
Billy?
We all know by now that the demographics are so varied. Some of them, like in Austin's hall, maybe it works perfectly, but in other areas, it might not. And the groups out the thing all with 50 more faces. Obviously, they're going to change it.
Good point.
It's something that's going to be determined by what the players will put up with, but it does give them flexibility.
John and then Corky. John?
Well, two things. The costs on these electronics are pretty low. That cost a much, much smaller percentage. Profit margin is... allow people to buy more than one pack, there's going to be unfair. You have more money and can play more packs. Level and across the board is to say no more than one pack per person. Otherwise, profitless. The person who wagers higher amounts of money is going to win more often. He's not necessarily going to win, come out better in the end.
Corky?
Again, folks, I couldn't have said it much better than what Bishop Dan said. You've got competition. You've got competition up on a hill. It won't matter then, because if you can't compete, die. This industry of the Sunday afternoon deal. Everybody, all of the nonprofits, lose all the funding for their programs. The issue is responsive to customers. You've got to build it so that you can bring new people information, meaning you have to be responsive to what technology is going on and how nonprofits can make more money to keep their programs going. Otherwise, don't even bother. Don't renew. Mike's shown us how far the active licenses have dropped.
Absolutely.
We are in a dying death spiral. The whole intention of this piece of legislation was to give us opportunity to try new things, to attract new players, to be competitive, and to make more money for nonprofits. You can't stay the same. Stay the same, you die. We are trying to reinvent bingo. We are trying to reinvent the ways in which nonprofits can exceed and find new ways to expand their ability to make money to support their programs. That's the whole kit and caboodle in a nutshell.
You guys have made some good points, and I think part of the problem with this thing is it says allow a player to use an electronic bingo aid device that has more than 54 faces. I think it should say not more.
Well, I think some people think it ought to be.
It should say not more.
Because it says more than.
It was missing a word.
It says more than 54 faces.
Shall not knowingly allow.
It shall not allow.
It shall be no more than 56 faces.
54.
Or 54, whatever.
Right. Shall not knowingly.
I mean, we got people out there who are under 76. We got people that are there. The issue is, how do I sell more packs? How do I get young people in the seat?
I see what you mean.
Et cetera. Okay. Sign up now, right, Rudy?
Okay, well, that's obviously a contentious issue, so submit your comments. The rulemaker decides on the basis of the number of letters that she receives. Okay, promotions. We now allow, under the statute, bingo raffle licensees to conduct promotions. We've limited that here to $1,000. And again, that is, you know, a paternalistic approach because we're not absolutely certain that you've got sufficient number of organizations out there that can afford to give merchandise or other prizes and services in excess of $1,000 and not be compensated for it some other way. So, we need your comments on that.
I like it.
I'm glad to see the 1,000 in there. I think it should be there. It could be some that can't, but at least the option's there.
Wasn't that the old number, too, though?
That was the old number for bingo for landlord licensees.
But the statute changed that it could be there.
Right. Now we go into raffles. I mean, most of the discussion here has been on bingo, but we're finding that more and more of our time is spent with organizations discussing raffles. So the approach that we have taken, because it's not addressed in the Constitution, it's not addressed in statute, so for purposes of the rules, we have tried to make it clearer for the organizations and for our own people so that we don't have inconsistent approaches to different raffles. And that the approach that we've taken says it has to be fair to the players, that everybody who buys a ticket has the same chance as everybody else who bought the ticket under the same conditions. And B, it has to be some kind of random selection. So I'm sure that we will see the duck races in Boulder again this year. And there are ways to do that to make it legitimate. But to pour ducks out of the bucket into a moving stream is not random. The guy who owns the last duck in the bucket doesn't have the same chance as the guy who has the first one out of the bucket. Now, you want to throw him into the whirlpool and mix him around and then open up the floodgate and let him run downstream. I'm okay with that. If you're going to discount your tickets, you need to tell people. If you're going to say you can buy tickets prior to May 31st for $10 and after May 31st they're $25, that's okay, so long as the public knows.
Mike, I still have on my list of things to do with the Dell raffle to see if we can specifically.
I still want to see it, John. I mean, we've got so many other kinds of raffles out there, and we've tried to address them. So if you have one that's, you know, fair to the players, send it in. So if you're going to, for example, use a stretch raffle, you have to tell the players what determines the stretch. You can't have a Bishop Dan come up and get for $10 the number of tickets that will fit within his arms, and then for $10 I only get the number that fit in my arms. That's not fair to me. So if you have a member of the event for the evening, your seven-year-old son come up and everybody gets the same number of tickets within his arm stretch, that's fine.
I would want this loud though myself.
But. Why don't you bring that up? Do we want to take a 10-minute break? Let everybody hit the restroom.
That's probably a good idea. We'll probably recess for 10 minutes.
I'll open up the door across the hall. Oh.
Where does it say? Remember, it used to be that if the prize was $250, well, you had to submit it to the state.
We eliminated it.
Okay, show me that. I sure didn't. I guess I missed it. I heard that before when I talked to the thousand. There it is. Okay. I see it. Bingo shall not offer merchandise or services at a price.
See, on raffles, you can do an automobile now, you can do real estate.
Yeah, but where does it say we have to submit to the state a copy of the raffle ticket?
I think we eliminated that. Let's see. Members Bingo.
Here it is. I found it on 25.
Saying that a bingo raffle licensee can't do $1,000. Later on, it's going to say a landlord can do up to $10,000, but he can't take any compensation beyond the $1,000.
Sit there with the door open and nobody came. So.
What door?
The door into the restroom area.
I have a question.
I could sure use a soda pop.
You already did several times. It opens the door.
Right.
How'd you get your chair to roll backwards?
I mean, to fold
backwards.
Oh, that goes up and down. Yeah, so they have to have. And the idea behind the key wrap is, and you. You still have to give them a ticket.
Okay,
because
that's what my assumption.
None of the pressure, if you don't sell all the keys, and you sell 98 out of 100, and really the winner is in the last two, those people who bought still have to have an opportunity to have
their press for a new chair.
Okay, so we're saying tickets, so we, anything over 1,000 still has a ticket, and then if you have the key in combination, whatever.
I got to be out of here by 1, so, okay. But we're about, I don't know, two-thirds of the way through,
two-thirds.
I think. Most of the stuff that's left, it doesn't impact you guys. It's manufacturer's license. If it works, fine. If people don't want to use it, that's fine. You know, I don't.
Sounds like we're talking about all stupid.
Before we get over there, bingo raffle licensee that conducts a raffle and the total value of the prize exceeds $1,000.
This is, we just changed the 250 to $1,000.
That's why that says it exceeds $1,000.
Yeah.
50, they could go to a 15, like the Boys and Girls Club's house raffle, $250,000 or $300,000 house. We just
as long as I let you know.
You have to have that ticket that says you got to be present to win. You got to have the license number on it. You know all that. You have to have a stub that has their name, address, and telephone number or whatever. But all we did here, this is essentially the same. Is we just changed this amount from 250 to 1,000. Well, we had a lot out there that, you know, they're all these hunting groups. Well, they give away a good weapon. You know, you give away a good over-under shotgun, you could well be over 250.
Absolutely.
You know, and probably over 750. You want to get started again?
Yeah,
we're going to go ahead and start again. Where were we?
I guess we never did stop the recording. But
just about ready to
approach.
You did. You paused.
I can bet it's still.
Oh, it's still picking up sound.
Just hanging it up.
Number didn't increase.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay, we're back. We're back to raffles. We've talked about discounted tickets that are sold at different times for different prices. Just let your purchasers know. We've had raffles over the years that have involved automobiles, that have involved houses. And we've had to work very hard with those licensees to make those kind of raffles work for them. So we've put in some provisions about automobile raffles, real estate raffles, with or without homes. So I would ask you to look at those provisions. They tend to be more legalistic. The driving factor is that regardless of how much money you bring in from the sale of tickets, you need to be able to award that prize or an identical or similar prize to the winner of the raffle. So if you're trying to raffle off a house that's worth $250,000 and you essentially have to pay for it, we're not requiring you to pay for it up front like we used to. But the winner of that raffle gets that house regardless of the fact that you only brought in $75,000 in the sale of tickets. So, okay, key raffles. We've had a lot of these. The issue about a key raffle was originally you couldn't sell just the key because we define ticket as this piece of paper. You notice that we changed the definition of ticket to include essentially any object that is discrete from every other object that you sell. We say, though, that in a key raffle, if you're trying to raffle off a car, people buy the key, and the winner is the key that opens up the car. What happens if you don't sell all the raffle tickets? Well, we've made a provision in here that says, A, you know, if you don't sell all the tickets, what you have to do up front is provide a paper ticket so that the paper ticket goes into the bin. If you sell 100 tickets and you only have 100 keys, then there's no problem. You don't have to dip into the bucket to pull out a raffle ticket. But if you only sell 98 keys and none of those keys work, then who's the winner? Well, the winner is whoever gets drawn out of that bucket, out of the tickets purchased. So you would have 98 tickets in, and that winner would then get the last two keys to walk up and open up the car. Card raffles. Oh, we have a lot of these in the hunting groups where they have a deck of cards and, you know, you pay a buck for them and you get half of the, you know, the ace of spades, and the other half of the ace of spades goes into the bin. The only thing that we want to make sure of here, and we put the burden on you, is that each half of that card needs to be roughly the same size as the other half of the card. So you can't tear off the corner in one card and then split it in half on another card, because the person reaching into the bin is going to have more of a likelihood of selecting the larger part of the card. We, remember, started at $250 before you had to start printing a separate ticket. In other words, the ticket that you printed up for a $290 raffle prize had to have your name and license number and where and when, whether you had to be present to win, and a stub that people would tear off and put into the bin so that you could call them in the event that they didn't need to be present to win. Now we're raising that from $250 to $1,000. One of the issues was that a lot of the hunting groups have firearms that they raffle off, and just about every firearm today is worth more than $250. So they were printing all these special tickets. Now you could go back to the theater-style tickets if your prize does not exceed $1,000. These are really more the kind of problems that we've been dealing with over the last year or so than the bingo-related problems. Okay. We changed the aggregate amount for the occasion to $2,500. We had a lengthy discussion on that. We changed the maximum for any single game to $500. Theoretically, you could run five games of $500 each if you wanted to. You could run, you know, 10 games at $250. We've given the organization a little bit more discretion there in terms of how they award those prizes. You could have three games at $500. never make that $2,500. I guess the point is we really don't care. We want you to be able to, you know, operate your games in a fashion that you think you're going to bring in more people. We have, pursuant to the statute, put a max limit of $15,000 on any single progression. Now, I know there have been discussion here of going to $25,000. We don't think that really solves the problem. I think from our perspective, we want to leave it at $15,000, and that's open to discussion. Right now, we have progressives out there that have gone, you know, $40,000-$50,000, and I think it creates a lot of problems. I'm thinking that $25,000 is going to continue to create those problems. Yes, sir.
There was a guy who called me, and I asked him to call you in your office. I think he talked to Kathy about, I can't remember the name of the company, but they do this in Washington and Oregon. They're a company that does, like a bonanza game. They say, okay, $100,000 payout, and they insure that payout. And so what they say is, if you have a blackout in 47 numbers, you win the $100,000, and then the numbers are increased after a certain amount of time. And they say you sell the cards to the players on a progressive for $2, the charity gets $1.50, and that group gets 50 cents. But they're the ones that insure the game, okay? So they make the payout to the game. So I didn't know if that would fit in here or not, but I had him call you and or send you information because it sounded like something that would be useful to the charities because it's not a risk to them at all. It's a potential progressive kind of game that's being done in the charity games in Washington, Oregon, and Alabama, and other places like that.
What's the board's preference?
Well, I don't care for it. Relying on an outside source that's to raise this money for us, so to speak. Yeah, they're making profit, but here we go with selling. It's just like having a bingo caller, paying for a bingo caller, somebody to pay bingo. I just don't like the way this handles. You get $2. Now, who's paying the tax on that $2? Who pays the tax? Now, on that
tax?
That we have to pay these guys.
I assume we pay based on the normal Secretary of State fees.
Well, that's right. Okay, we're paying their fees. So are we paying fees on the gross, which is, or whatever it is? I don't know. You say,
well, we pay the fees on the gross now.
And it's all internal. We're shipping this money out of state, correct?
I don't know where they're located exactly. But the only money we're shipping out of the state is 50 cents.
Yeah. Oh, just 50 cents? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The charity gets the $1.50.
Well, I'd have to look at it more, but it just strikes me as...
Well, I know. That's why
not
I
real
don't...
Good.
I just found
to
out...
To have these outside agencies come in and do
to
it.
They're supposed to be sending you paperwork, Mike, yeah. I think, and brochures. Are you familiar with the Don?
Yeah, in charity games. It's primarily used in the tribal games.
Yeah, to compete with the Indians and the other, and the casinos. My understanding is it's really boomed in Washington. You know, they used to do satellite games at the halls in Washington. And because of this one, they got rid of those satellite games because this is doing so well for them. And so I just thought, well, gee, we might as well have the Secretary of State look at it and see what it looks like to them and see if it's...
I certainly think it's something that we should look at.
Yeah, they should look at it. We should get a review on it. Yeah, but
the only thing I'm bringing up now is, does that affect that number up there, Mike, if you see my point?
Oh, yeah. It would. It would if we limit it to $15,000. I think our...
Unless we said $15,000 on all progressives except...
Rule change once.
Anyway, I just thought it sounded interesting, you know, because it's no risk.
think what we want to do is leave it at 15,000 right now, see how it works. If it needs to be tweaked during later rulemaking, we can do that now. The other thing that we've done here is the landlord licensee can award a prize and a promotion that does not exceed $10,000. However, anything above $1,000, the landlord has to absorb. You can work it out with your organizations. You can charge them up to $1,000, which is essentially what you can do now as a landlord. But if you want to give away a car, then a cheap car, then you can do that. But you can't build it into your agreement with your organization that they pay for that. Well, it has to be voluntary on the part of the licensee.
One up to 1,000.
This says the landlord can't require anything above 1,000, which implies that he can require.
Okay.
I thought that was already in the rule, though, that they could do that on up to $1,000.
What?
Up to the $1,000. It was already.
He can't require it.
But it was allowed.
It's allowed, yes.
In the rule.
That's all he's trying to say.
You can't force him to do it.
Right.
Okay. We'll change that.
Go back.
Sure. Where do you want to go back to?
I'm sorry. Would you go back to, it looks like 13I1?
See me sell raffle tickets at bingo occasions?
Yeah. The sale of raffle tickets is made at a location separate from the sale of bingo cards, packs, sheets, or pull tabs.
That's existing language.
Is that existing language?
Yep.
Okay. Well, my question on that one is if you have four walkers selling sheets, can they also sell pull tabs? I mean, not pull tabs. Raffle tickets.
I'm not sure why we had that rule in there in the first place.
I don't think you recall. Because I never noticed it.
Anybody, John, do you recall why we even put that rule in there?
I could not see any purpose for that. Money's kept in separate cigar boxes.
Or it's registered differently on the keyboard, you know.
I'll take two packs. Would you also like to have some raffle tickets? Sure.
Okay.
One and two covers.
That works. Well, no, you still want to record them separately.
Yeah. I have a serious question.
Yes, as opposed to non-serious ones.
All the rest of it looks frivolous.
I thought they were all serious.
But because the smoking rules come into effect July 1st, if they don't get an injunction, the smoking rules come in July 1st. We're building, you know, we're putting in benches and we're building this deck out in front, 15 feet from the door. Sell pull tabs.
I thought that we had tried to build into these rules within the definition of licensed premises. This is in, in or on.
Okay.
I think I changed that wording. So you could have floor walkers selling pull tabs out in your smoking area.
Okay, I just want to make sure that we didn't do something wrong.
That is in there? Because we need it. I'd like to see another little provision.
Okay.
When you say licensed premises, some, according to this rule, you can build it out on the sidewalk, etc., as long as you're on the side of the building, so to speak. That's going to be in city area or county area.
So you want language that says owned, leased, or under the control of?
Yeah. There you go.
That'd be good. Okay.
That'd be good. That's good.
Is a sidewalk under your control, even though it belongs to the city?
If we have a permit from the city, yes.
It's not under
our
control.
Does it have to be fenced off?
Just make a note. It goes up under the deck.
You know, you've seen a lot of these restaurants that have
decks and everything.
Yeah, decks out.
That, yeah, that'll be back under definitions then.
Out there at the hall.
Okay.
Pardon?
It does
go past the sidewalk because we have our booths underneath the sidewalk. In the basement. Booths underneath the sidewalk in the basement. Booth. B-O-O-T-H.
Okay. I was hiding booths.
Booths.
And got the little cabinet door where Mary won't catch me.
The other thing that we deleted, and this impacts the licensees that operate bingo, could never figure out why we had a rule that says you can only sell tickets for one raffle during a you might have three or four different raffles. Just make sure you account for them separately.
Good.
Okay, here is talked about prize amounts and payment of prizes. This may actually be we've already addressed this. I'm sorry. Yeah, Nick caused me to back up.
I'm sorry.
Okay, accounting, we've just kind of broken this out into a hopefully a little bit more readable fashion. Okay, allowable expenses. I was so tired of trying to figure out the CPI every year that allowed us to go from $16 for security to $16.73. We just put in a flat amount. You can pay up to that amount. Now, here's one of the things that we did do, and this is a responsibility of the board. If your games manager is also doing your bookkeeping for you, and you're going to pay $75 an occasion, that's fine. But you have a responsibility to just notify us of that fact. So what we're requiring you to do as a games manager is to go to your board and say, yeah, I'm getting paid here, and you need to send this letter in to us. It may be that some boards don't always know that their games managers are getting paid for doing that.
I'll give you an example for us. I think we're authorized, what, $20 per question or $40?
$40,
something like that there. My bookkeeper, because she's volunteer and all this other, she gets $10, $40 a month. She's certainly happy with it. I couldn't tell you. $75, we're in a community that doesn't make a lot of money. But 75, if that's what they want, heck. We're talking about this money. I think it's a lot of money for bookkeeping for bingo. $75 per occasion. Holy mackerel, Andy. That's crazy. That is crazy, 75. But
up to 75.
I mean, even to allow them to pay $75 for an hour of work, 2 hours worth of work, this is ridiculous.
It's not just the time, though. It's the
expertise.
I think
I don't think so. When you got all the forms online, you got a computer program. All you do is just like bunk, 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 and goes. No, I don't think it's a lot of responsibility. And particularly if, I don't know if you get audited every year, the Elks Lodges get audited every year by an auditor, and by golly, he goes through that with a tooth and nail and or a comb, you know,
fine tooth comb,
and I don't see any problem. $75 is a lot of money.
What's your preference? Do you want us to do a thou shalt not, or you may?
Well,
I think you should leave it at you may pay $75. Hopefully they'll get it cheaper. But in some areas they can't.
Shall not pay more than $75. I think it's fine.
Well, yeah. It could be. To me, it's a ripoff.
Yeah.
That's what it said. Shall not pay more than
that. Yeah. But I mean,
that's fine.
But that allows me as a games manager to say, I've got my girlfriend coming in here to do the books, so I'm going to give her all I can.
And your board has responsibility to look at that, too. Your governing board.
I don't think the Yawks will allow you to do that.
Well, I know.
I'm going
to
tell Mary.
We've got to try to wrap this up by 1 o'clock, gentlemen, so let's move on to rental agreements.
Okay, we're down to rental agreements. Give 2 weeks' notice to the landlord.
Yeah.
Or upon the voluntary cessation of games of chance, which means that if you've decided that you just cannot make money at bingo, you notify the landlord and you stop bingo. But it doesn't mean that you can say, well, we're out of bingo, and then move to the hall down the street and commence bingo. Then the landlord can come back at you and say, well, you owe me for 2 weeks' worth of occasions.
Again, on that B, it doesn't mean that the organization has to pay anything towards that $1,000 promotion.
What I think what that's saying is if he puts it as part of their lease price, then they have to pay it, but they don't have to lease it if they don't want it.
If you've agreed to it, then you're going to sign the rental agreement. If you don't agree to it, then you need to work up some other rental agreement. That's, you know, between the organization and the landlord. Okay, John, here's your favorite one. And I think that after examining auxiliaries, we've come to a different approach on how we're going to look at auxiliaries in the future. Okay?
I've got a speech all prepared on this issue. We constantly have issues not being able to staff their bingos because it's so difficult to get volunteers out. Not the no compensation prohibition in the Constitution, very hard to change, probably never going to be changed. One thing that we can do statutes that by the constitutional our interpretations stories is more liberalized interpretation pretty in the statute a long ways. We should just post B in their bingo. Neither one of them may not have enough volunteers to run a bingo by themselves, but they should be able to get together, get their both auxiliary to Lodge 27 and together and run one bingo session. And I think that was it behind the statutory language on auxiliaries when it talked about each two auxiliaries getting together to go as long as they're both auxiliary to one additional.
Unfortunately, the statute doesn't describe it that way. we talk about auxiliaries to each other. So if a licensee is an auxiliary of a parent organization, members of the parent can work the games, other than as a games manager, of the licensee. If the parent is the licensee and it has an auxiliary underneath it, the members of the lower auxiliary can work the games of the licensee. The third one is affiliates. And so only if you're an affiliate of a licensee and the affiliate and the licensee are auxiliaries of a parent organization can the members of the affiliate work the games of the auxiliary. So it's not like you have two Elks lodges that are auxiliaries of the state Elks. They can't work each other's games according to the statute.
The statute reads on the third one, for a member of in the corporate sense of the word, this, the word affiliated here means related to the licensee. Affiliates in the corporate sense.
Well, I think that we've looked at the definition of an affiliate, and it means, for example, you can have the women's, or I think Sons of the American Legion is a good example. You can only be a member of the Sons of the American Legion if you are affiliated to a member of the American Legion by being, you know, familiarly related to that member. Now, if you want to try and submit a legal brief that says our interpretation of the statute is incorrect and it ought to be expanded, I'm open to it. But that's the way that we've interpreted what they've put into the statute. And we're open to written comment on this provision. But one of the things that we have done here is expanded the existing rule, because I don't believe the existing rule encompassed all of the provisions of the statute. We were more restrictive in the rule, and there really wasn't anything our investigators could do because we had a rule that we had to follow. Now we have an opportunity to change the rule. Okay, and then we get into landlord licensees. Doesn't impact most of the bingo raffle licensees. We allow the landlord to terminate the license under a couple of situations, 2 weeks' notice or failure to pay. Now, is that, I put that in probably after we had met a couple of weeks ago. So is missing payment on three bingo occasions a reasonable amount? If you have a group that doesn't pay you for three and they work three in a week, you can give them notice right then and there at the end of that third occasion where they haven't paid you. Okay. Manufacturers and suppliers, games managers, essentially the same. The games manager training is going to be changed so that we will provide short form training for games managers that have been around for a while. Maybe just take a test online. We haven't fully worked that out yet. Put electronic devices all into one spot. I don't think we made any major changes there. You'll notice that we did take out, okay, we added in provisions for these random number generators that essentially follow the what you have to do with us in order to get your electronic aid approved. You have to do the same thing with a random number generator. Fines and violations stay the same. Didn't make any additions in there. And the one big deletion that you see from existing rules is that we no longer have a provision in there for fees, because fees are set in Title 24, and then we can change the fees on an annual basis to reflect our costs and income. And the proposal to the Secretary of State will be that bingo raffle licenses will go to $100 a year. The fees for quarterly reports will jump to 0.005 or thereabouts for those organizations making more than $100,000 a year gross. Probably go to 0.0045 for organizations making less than that. And for organizations making less than $25,000 a year, there'll probably be no fee at all. The fees on suppliers will go to 1.25% on all equipment, and you know that under the statute, electronic aids are now defined as equipment. And that concludes the our question presentation.
Electronic aids are defined as equipment, but it's the sale, not the...
It could go to sale or lease. We have to work the numbers. It might not be 1.25. It might drop down to 0.75 on all sales and leases. So,
electronic aids, we're not selling, we're leasing, so the language is selling.
Yeah, but remember the language is it was in rule, not in statute. So that whole rule has been taken out. So the fees will be based on whatever Secretary of State decides, and they'll probably go into effect about the same time that these rules are heard. So right, I'm looking at right around the 1st of August. To pay it back, it's based on a 5-year payback. But it's also based on us having to recover the $100,000 a year that we're short right now. So it'll impact the big organizations more, but you know it's not going to be too onerous. We can't charge money just to be charging money. We have to balance what our costs are against what we charge. So there are some fairly sophisticated spreadsheets out there right now trying to figure out who pays what. But the big thing is for we want to get rid of mandatory quarterly reports if you don't do anything. So we're working on that right now. I'm open to questions, sir.
Anybody have any comments out there you want to make concerning these draft rules? Hopefully those of you that, I'll get you in a second, John, have any changes, you'll get them into Mike soon. He has to have them by the third Friday in July. He has to be ready to go by the third Friday in July to make any revisions or changes. John?
Well, the fees payable by the licensee is for years.
What we submitted to the legislature was just on fees of the bingo raffle licensees. We didn't touch fees on suppliers, manufacturers, and landlords at all. And we could recover the cost just by that 0.001 increase, and only on those that were doing more than $100,000 a year. But if we kind of adjust everybody's a little bit so that, you know, we make the additional we need to make about $110,000 extra a year over the next 5 years to balance everything out. So.
I'm going to make the assumption, Mike, that these proposed rules are on the Secretary of State's website right
no,
now.
No, they are not. Not. We will get them out there shortly, probably first part of next week, so everybody can have access to them. Right now, they're strictly on our internal drives, but anybody that wants copies of them, just send us, you know, send us an email, and we'll send it back to you.
So is it just word of mouth that is going to get information out to the nonprofits that don't even know about these kinds
no,
of discussions?
No, we will get them out there very quickly, but we're also working to go out there and do these kind of presentations to groups of organizations. You know, we think that they need to have as much opportunity to respond to the proposed rules as the people in Metro Denver do.
I'd venture to guess most of them don't even know this has even been worked on.
Right.
We've been telling people in the games manager classes that there are rules, and I think that they've actually been handing them out over the last couple of classes that that have been done. We've been getting calls from other parts of the state, so I know that there are people who know about it. And unfortunately, there are a lot of rumors that aren't true. Fortunately, by hearing that, we have kind of modified our position on how soon we want to get these in, and we will, you know, if it takes an extra month or 2 months to do it, that's what we'll do. I don't want a set of rules going through, and then 2 days after the rules are effective, we've got people screaming at us saying, you didn't tell us about this, and we, you know, so. That's true, and they're still in a working draft mode until they are posted as part of rulemaking. Now, one of the things that we could do, we could say we're going to have rulemaking as of the 1st of August, but we wouldn't really be posting the rules. I want to be able to post the rules in a format, hopefully by the end of July, or third Friday of July, that people can look at them and say, okay, this is in pretty wet concrete right now, or there's not going to be a whole lot of movement. And that's why over the next month, we'd like to have comments in for or against the major provisions that have obviously constituted some controversy here.
Right. Just a question. So once that process takes place, who is the rulemaker? I mean, you keep referring to the rulemaker will make a decision.
The rulemaker is either going to be Secretary Dennis or it's going to be Bill Hobbs. Okay, there will be a hearing. It will be a full hearing. They will go through and make as part of the record all the submissions, and then people have an opportunity to come in and actually testify on the record as to why or why not a particular rule should be adopted. And then the rulemaker will go back with all of this public record and say, okay, here's the rule that we're going to adopt. And that's why I would like to have consensus on most of these issues that are still in contention we can live with that. Or, no, there is no way that we want that passed. So that's why we need things either in written submission or you got to show up to testify at the hearing. Because if you don't do either, it will be all those people who do send in written submissions that sway the rulemaker.
So the greasy wheel gets the...
That's correct. Sure.
So, for example, I'm having a meeting on the 24th at the Bingo Company Hall with all the groups to explain the new rules. Does the Secretary of State want to come to that and do this?
Be more than happy to come out there and do that.
Okay.
Sure.
If you want to. The problem is we got to do it relatively quickly out there because they have a meeting that starts.
Can't do a 2.5 hour discussion of the, no?
So say an hour would be good.
June 24th?
Yeah.
Is that a Saturday or is that a Friday?
Saturday at 9:30
at the Bingo Company, 9:30 a.m. 9:30 a.m. Interferes with my golf game on Saturday.
You know.
I'll be there.
Is
going to be appearing to the client also.
Now, you bet I am. June 24th, 9:30.
Yeah. Now, because you're coming, Mike, I can call other halls, like Hollywood and other halls that are out in that area, and ask them when to all come.
That's fine. The more we get, the better. So, what's the address?
64th and Wadsworth.
Oh, okay. I know where it is.
Bring money to play.
What time does the game start?
The game does start something.
Okay, 9:30 a.m. Okay.
Is it necessary for us to look at your next draft revision? Give it a blessing before you go into the hearing process?
The only thing I see changing in the draft right now are those issues about giving the games manager more authority. You might want to take a look at that, see if it meets your needs. A couple of other tweaking of some language, and we've got the notes. So we'll get it, the latest changes, we'll get it out to you, and you can take a look at it. I'll try and highlight those provisions, take out the track changes stuff, and I'll just put in bold those changes that were made as a result of this meeting.
I want to come a little early so we can set your computer up to the TV screen.
Okay.
Quick question.
Either that or I can bring a projector and a computer if you have a screen or a white wall.
That's the problem.
Okay.
So we have a big screen, don't we have an amplifier you can go right from your computer into the...
Okay. All right.
I was going to talk about it later, but my other question, I think you explained it a little bit at the very beginning of the meeting, is who did come up with these? I was...
You're looking at him. Now... We had a meeting. I took the original rules and reformatted them, reorganized them, put in some things that I thought we needed based on conversations with Rudy and my investigators. We did meet with CCBA here, 2 weeks ago, got some comments from them. And if there are errors or omissions, blame me. And if you have comments, let me know.
The advisory board didn't do it before; they're doing it now, right?
Unless it was on an individual basis, so the advisory board as a group member did something.
Rudy has been sending out the various versions of the rules to everybody on the advisory board.
Okay.
So, but. To be honest with you, it can get a little confusing when you see various versions.
Yeah. And there was some discussions on the board, different types, different things that we wanted in the rules while we were working on the legislation itself. And Mike made a lot of those notes when we were doing those sessions, suggestions and things we wanted in the rules.
Again, I want to reiterate, this is a public process. The rules are there for your protection. I mean, and it's to amplify those provisions in the statute. And so where the statute says, you know, you got to have a rule on this and the Secretary of State will make rules, then we go through the rulemaking process. But even what you saw today is not set in stone, and it could get to the hearing, and based on testimony at the hearing, the Secretary of State could make a decision that goes a different way. These are all, at this point in time, recommended by the various constituencies that we have in Bingo.
But doesn't since the House bill was signed, 1086, got to put something in some of those. Is that right? It's got to put some of these rules into that, like the amount of bingo to be given away?
Because the statute said as set by rule.
Right.
We've had this discussion. Here's the way here's the way it works. That those things that are in the statute, for example, secondary jackpot, the bill was signed on the 25th or the 28th. The secondary jackpot could start with a new progressive game anytime after the bill was signed. that's not, we don't do anything in rule on that. Where a rule exists about a certain limit today, and the statute gives us the ability to increase or modify or decrease that limit that's already set in rule, and we don't have rules that are new rules that are adopted, the existing rule applies. If there was a limit that was set in statute and there was no rule on it, and the statute now says it's done by rule, it's kind of open season. So there is a transition period in there where organizations kind of have to be careful about what they do.
Answer your question for you?
Process, if some jump forward, I think it all
Yeah, but trying to do rules in advance of a statute is kind of like beating your head against the wall, you know. So it's unfortunate, and it's unfortunate that the process takes as long as it does. But I think the reason is because you want to get input from as many people who are affected by the rules as possible. Like I say, I don't want to have rules adopted and then 2 or 3 days later have people screaming at me that, you know, we didn't include them in the process.
Mike, is it too early to ask, based on what has been put out there and the feedback you've gotten so far, what is the most contentious issue right now?
I would say that from what I heard today, the $2,500 occasion limit.
I was just going to bring that up again just last time.
And, you know, I'm not sure that we really take a position. You guys have been doing the bingo for years and years. You know what your market is. You know what your...
It's probably the toughest one that I even have as an issue. I mean, just as a general comment, not to beat the dead horse on this one, but of the 46 states that regulate bingo, 2,500 is probably the lowest prize payout in any of the 46 states. And, John, I think you might be able to concur with that. I think it is. Wisconsin was the last one to raise it to $2,500. So, you know, you got the age-old problem. $2,500, you're going to have to raise prices to, in some cases, or do the level buy-in, as Bishop suggested. So it's going to be a contentious issue, but I think we need to do something to get the people coming into bingo as opposed to going to the hill. And $2,500 in the big scheme of bingo is not a lot of money, but it's a jump from $1,500 to $2,500, and it's going to be a tough pill to swallow for a lot of people because they immediately know that they're going to have to raise the pack prices to people who don't think they can afford to do that now. It's going to be a tough one. That's exactly what I've seen, too. Yeah.
That's kind of what happens where it's the market rather than an artificially regulated price payouts.
The same was true with Washington and Oregon when they were really hurting on bingo, and now they're just booming on bingo because they've increased the amount of money that they're able to give.
And the reason most states have put the increase on is because of the proliferation of tribal gaming or riverboat gaming or whatever.
Right.
It's just happened everywhere. In Colorado, we've got a situation where we had for the Hill and not so much with the tribal, but I think it's definitely time for a change. Just what the magic number is, we don't know yet.
Austin, any comments from you?
Nope.
Nick?
No.
I think that there's no reason for the board to meet again until September, until after we've heard the hearing, or have the hearings. So whatever the second Wednesday in September is, we'll put a notice out. It'll be our next board meeting. Okay, we stand adjourned.
We'll be there 3 months.
Okay.